President.
Yeah.
Mr. Coulson.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Well, I was just looking at the front pages of papers, and I saw that picture in one of the papers of those little kids. I guess it was a star. I thought, well, that made the whole thing worthwhile, didn't it?
Was that a marvelous shot?
And just think of those little kids, what it's going to mean to them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
In fact, the star gave us read them all yet, but the star gave us a hell of a good story, Sherman.
Sherman really went, I saw the first part of it, yeah.
Well, he laid it out beautifully, as a matter of fact.
Laid it out the way we want it. And
gonna take just those lines and get them around to our people who keep not drawing that issue as cleanly as...
Just be clean. I mean, the whole point is, yes, they can have it, but they must serve, they must pay the penalty for having left the country.
That's right.
Huh?
You put that right... Yesterday.
Well, that's the way it is. That's the way it's always been, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know what the hell our people are thinking of. What the hell are they thinking of?
Well, they're
getting to the moral and immoral war crap. That's what it really is.
Yeah.
Did anybody talk of amnesty, basically, for World War II deserters?
No.
Not really.
No.
No. We thought, with most people thought, particularly in the Jewish press, they should all be shot.
Uh-huh.
Am I right?
That's exactly right. Well, I think the thing we need, Mr. President, is just, you did it brilliantly yesterday, and I'm sure it'll carry around the country. It's just every now and then put that issue in focus, and there's not a damn thing the government can do about it. He can scream that he's not drawing you out, he's not getting you into a debate.
That's right.
And, he can't confront you when the issue is
Well, I'm saying things.
Oh, my God, of course, and that's what's driving him crazy. That's really what he's saying. He hasn't been able to best us on the issues. It was an incredible, apparently, interview last night I heard on the radio.
What was that?
Well, it was something he had taped on Friday evening, and I've asked one of my assistants to try to track it down, because it was a very pitiful plaintiff kind of a thing. He was saying, I just can't get this campaign going because I can't get Nixon to come out and talk about the issues with me, and he just doesn't want to campaign with me, and unless I can get him out and confront him on these issues, we'll never make our case to the American people.
Oh,
and
bullshit.
Everybody's against me, kind of thing. Really, a persecution complex. Everybody's against me. I can't get... He didn't say that, but that was
mm-hmm.
I can't get time on the networks to put my case across. I can't put my whole issues before the people, and...
You know, Alderman told me that O'Brien had filed this complaint. Why the hell didn't he file it at the time that the networks made this decision months and months ago?
Oh, sure.
There's no question here, is there?
Oh, no, no.
The networks are being very fair in this respect.
Yes.
I mean, you can buy time, can't you?
You can buy time. What he's trying to do is get a specific amount of half-hour time that earlier in the campaign they had come to both parties and said, here's what we're going to do, and nobody objected.
That's right.
Because nobody wanted half-hour time, frankly. As a matter of fact,
I don't want it.
No, and I'm a little unhappy they won't give it to him because, to me it would burn up some money and turn people off. Just bore the hell out of
them. Why don't you tell him to give it to him, can they?
Well, I think he...
Wait a minute. Why doesn't Dole says he has no objection? That puts the bee right on their back.
Yeah, he today is going... That's a good point.
Yeah, get Dole to say, I have no objection whatever to their selling him time. He says this is a decision on their part. And we have no objection whatever if the networks want to sell them time. We want them to have every opportunity to present their case.
Uh-huh.
It's a network decision, and we have nothing to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Be sure he gets that across.
Yeah, I'll call it. That's very important, because that's good. if he wants to spend the kind of money that he'll have to spend to go on network half hour, I think it's $150,000.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good. Pretty good piece of money.
Yeah, as I recall, he does that four times. It's fine. What the hell?
That's good.
Those are all. That's all dollars that he can't spend in other kinds of media funds, which I think might do him more good than it.
Mm-hmm.
But
good.
There's a sense of frustration. I don't know how much you've read of the Sunday press. I haven't.
I read as little as I can get away with.
I have to admit, I slept a little bit late this morning.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten through it all. But
I don't read it.
There's a real sense of frustration in it, Mr. President, that even among the people that have been generally friendly to McGovern, there's a sense that he's really grappling and on the defensive. As Valeriani said Friday night, I was amazed. Valeriani said that the harder the line that McGovern is taking, the more he appears to be coming across on the defensive. basically, he's at the moment a very desperate man. Very desperate.
Mm-hmm. Our more intellectual types in the White House staff people feel is, they say, oh, don't, you know, they've always said, don't play to the Catholics, don't play to the blue collar, don't play to the Italians, because they said the real votes are out there in those suburbs among the upper middle class, you know, the 15 to 25,000 and so forth. Well, my point is, we're doing as well there as we always do, and there ain't much better we can do.
That's correct.
And basically, a lot of those people are soft, Chuck. They really are. Am I right?
Absolutely.
You see, if you thought only of those suburbs, what would you be doing? You'd be signing the water bill, right?
You'd be signing the water bill, and you'd be appealing, Mr. President, to...
I would soften amnesty. I would copper pot. You know, that's basically...
And you would never talk about busing, because that's a divisive...
Busing is divisive, and who knows, we don't want to appear to be... You see, there's really, that's it. One of the things we're doing is drawing sharp, tough, on sharp issues on these things that cut into the gut issues.
An election campaign where there is such a difference in philosophy of the two candidates, by God, ought to be divisive. It
yeah.
ought to be the kind of thing where...
Absolutely.
Where those blue-collar workers in Macomb County can come out and say, I stand for what President Nixon stands for, not for what George McGovern stands for. And you could muddle it and be as sophisticated in rhetoric as enough to really get to those upper-income suburbanites
right.
and impress them.
Right. Right.
But you lose all this huge reservoir
of very interesting.
People that are just waiting to... they're waiting for their candidate. They haven't had it. Yeah, they really haven't. Wallace just points out that a lot of these are Wallace people. And
mm-hmm.
I guess Doyle's piece in the Star today was talking about all the Wallace people that are now for you in New Jersey. Well, that's right. Those are...
Fine. They
should be. ...native people that...
They sure as hell can't be from McGovern.
I don't know. That's feel put upon.
Sure.
It's interesting the effort they're making to get him, though, isn't it?
You mean how, by...
Well, Teddy going down to see him.
Yeah.
That was no... That wasn't any courtesy call.
Right.
They really... the McGovern people really...
Yeah.
They really want him.
That's right.
But I don't think they...
But they're not going to get Wallace.
No, I don't see how he could ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
He would be crazy to... Honestly.
Well, he's smart enough to know what the hell they're after, and he's also smart enough to know they aren't going to win.
Yeah, well, he made a great quip after they left, which was, I may express my preference about January 10th, which was, he said after Kennedy left. But it's what's interesting to me is that they're trying to get, of course, there's another interesting thing that Jim Scher has pointed out to me yesterday, who I think has turned into...
Jim?
Scher is the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, he's a very good analyst, I must say.
Well, you know, I was very interested in that because our domestic people, for the most part, said, oh, he's sort of wild, and Klein thought he was a little wild and so forth. I said, the hell with it, he's for us.
you spotted a real winner with this guy.
He believes, that's the point. We need believers.
He's a believer, and he's keen. He's very keen. He came to me yesterday, and he said, you know what? He said, I'm convinced, and he said, everybody I've talked to is convinced that debate that McGovern had with the plant worker in Columbus was utterly devastating to McGovern.
Hmm.
And he said, it really hurt him. He said, there isn't any question that there he was standing there debating middle America, and he's on the wrong side of a gut issue for middle America. But he said, what's more significant than that is that the McGovern people think it helped them. And he then pointed out to me in this George Lardner column about who's just writing the government stuff for him in the Post.
Oh, sure.
Headed the whole man that it's a debating at which he excelled in his youth after painstaking application brings him out of his shell most effectively, as it did Wednesday morning in a lively exchange over Vietnam with two workers at the Western Electric Plant in Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said is that what Scherz was saying is that McGovern really thinks that's helping. And he said, this is fascinating because either he's reading the mood of the American public altogether wrong, or we're reading it altogether wrong.
But, that's right.
But what we think is hurting him, he thinks is helping him. And later in that same piece, it says, not everybody in the McGovern camp agrees that the candidate is being sliced too thin. I think he's coming across, said McGovern's national political director, Frank Mankiewicz. People who see these news clips of him attacking Nixon don't care where he's talking from. 5 weeks from now, after seeing him every night, they'll know him. See, that's Mankiewicz thinks that these very, very shrill attacks are helping.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I don't think
it is. Well, that's the question is, suppose it does, how much? My view is that that's the problem these clowns have got. It's just as well to let them thrash around.
Oh, exactly.
But be sure that the real study now is every one of these reporters that said this, I want to be sure we've got a chapter and verse so they can be murdered in a beautiful little book afterwards.
Well, that's just
what the press, I mean, how the press, the media's, I mean, if the media had their way or if the media's predictions had been listened to, I'd kill them with that.
Yep.
Now, that's being done, is it?
Oh, yes. Sure is doing that.
Right.
And, he's got all of Osborne's stuff. He's got all of the, well, he's gone right through the whole list, right?
The whole bunch. And also the some of the top people like Cronkite and others, you know, every time they, things they'd like to forget, that's the point.
Yep.
In other words, what they'd like to forget they said or wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful thing to do.
That will have the opportunity to cut them up.
That's the opportunity to cut them up and also to remind the country that they were on the wrong side.
Yep. Well, I think that's really what may come out of this election.
Well, you see, here's the whole point, in my view. On this debate business, I think actually you're going to find, as I told you, you'll find both on the Doral Hotel. We had even in our own group people who told us, yeah, Finch and Ehrlichman, both of whom are basically highly intellectual,
uh-huh.
and both of whom thought that he did well to go down and talk to these idiots.
Uh-huh.
But the other hand, you see, neither of them believe the Middle America thesis. See, I mean, they believe in me. That isn't the question.
No.
See, the Middle America thesis is mine. I mean, I'm the one that stuck this hard hat thing out there. And I've done it. You remember when I saw the hard hats,
sure
the whole staff practically went up in smoke.
That's right. I called them in and everybody was mad as hell at me.
Yeah. But my point is, Chuck, that's just a judgment call.
Yeah.
If the Mankiewicz people think that he ought to get out there and debate the plant workers, okay, fine. If they think Schreiber ought to have a bean to eat and glorious Texas or whatever that is, that's fine.
Yep. Couldn't be happier.
That's up to them. They may be right. We may be right. We think we're right, however.
Well,
in any event, the main point is, and here's the other thing, I think the issue should be drawn.
Yep.
I don't think I should come across as one who's trying to appeal to these soft-headed goddamn Georgetowners.
Yep.
Because I don't believe in them. And you know, I think that's one thing that is getting across. Ever since May 8th, I stuck it to them then, and since then I haven't given them one inch.
No.
And I don't intend to.
And since then you've done nothing but solidify your support of the country, the leadership. I mean, there's no question that was an absolutely decisive turning point, Mr. President. It was a different ballgame.
Right.
Pre-made. That just brought it all together. That galvanized what a hell of a lot of people were beginning to think about you. They were beginning to have much more confidence. And that just brought it together and hardened it.
Of course, what really kills these assholes is this too, is that they really, now this is my judgment on the basically this intellectual elite jerks that we've got in HEW and domestic council. Here's their attitude in the word, I'll tell you. They talk about, they bleed all over the place about the poor Mexicans and the poor blacks and the poor that, but they do not like them individually.
That's right.
In other words, they like them as a class.
That's right.
And they want to help them as a class. They like them individually. I'm exactly the other way around.
Yep.
I'm for them individually. I can relate to them. I can talk to them. I'll tell you, I don't think that McGovern would have bombed out before that Rio Grande High School student body.
Sure.
He would have.
Yeah.
Because he just, not because he would have been too damned intellectual.
That's right. Well, that's the elitist notion.
That's right.
The elitist, and it's the same way.
But don't you agree that that's really the fundamental difference here that we have?
That is it.
And the press sees this, and the press go in, and they see this enormous reception in Laredo, and in Rio Grande, and Harlingen, and the rest, and all the Mexicans out, and they say, Jesus, what the Christ is this?
Exactly.
Because they think they are the ones that are for them.
Well, it's the same way that, you know, the Southerners have always been very compassionate towards the Negro as an individual, but
sure.
Not as a class.
That's right.
And it's just the reverse. And what you really have, by the way, CBS last night ran more scenes out of Texas. I was amazed. They ran them up the crowds again. And superb in their evening news. But there's a feeling of individual empathy or individual, when those young labor people were there identifying with you personally, and you were identifying with them personally, as distinguished from the McGovern elitist concept of here's this class of people out there.
That's right.
There's a detachment, there's a distance between them.
That's right.
Yourself. And
a detachment, which is a result of the elitists consider, well, we're a little better educated, and therefore we don't dirty our hands with these slobs.
That's right.
Except, of course, we'll help them. We'll give them welfare, and we'll put them out to pasture.
Yep.
And
we need them for the movement. For the movement.
That's right. We'll use them, but we really won't be one of them.
That's what it really kills them.
It kills them. But anyway, apart from whether it kills them, whether it's right or wrong, I'm going to do it because I am really tired of this city and its attitudes and the media and all the rest. They have this unbelievable arrogance and pride, and it's wrong.
The word is arrogance. It really is infuriating, the arrogance.
That's right.
The way they are absolutely have an enormous distaste for anyone who identifies with the...
Yeah.
And I'm sure that just like bringing those hard hats into the White House, I'm sure that people think, isn't that demeaning to the...
That's right. They wouldn't say that if I brought in, however, a bunch of sharecropping Negroes.
Oh, no.
That's different.
That's right.
See?
That's the whole point that I forgot whether it's the Star or the Post this morning. Has an analysis of young workers. Oh, I guess the Star had an in-depth Lubell type. It wasn't Lubell. Angry young workers. That's what they're angry at, that everybody else has been paid attention to except them. They consider themselves the heart of the country. And that's something that I think you have captured. That's what you've captured with the labor vote. And, of course, that's what Meany is saying in his so-called neutrality that is so important to you. What he is saying, you read that whole speech that he gave at the steelworkers. What he is really saying is that isn't the people's, the common man's party that went to Miami. There were a third of them that had a graduate degree, and he said there were no plumbers among those delegates.
A third had graduate degrees. Think of that.
And no plumbers. And he said, and they were all making more than $30,000 a year. He said they brought welfare people along to put them out front and show them. But he said this party, that is not the party of labor. That's not the party of the working man or woman. That's the party of elitism. And he told them that. And what he's really saying is to the union members, teach them a lesson, clean them out. Clean them out. That's the point Scammon was making. Scammon said to me, he said, God, he said, I want to see you fellows win so big that there can be a two-party system.
That's what Connolly deals to you. He wants to really beat them.
Well, Scammon says the only hope for the two-party system is for the president to do what Johnson did, to go or better, and wipe them out. He said otherwise, what is going to happen in this country is that you're not going to have a viable two-party system because those jerks don't represent a party. They represent a very small ideological minority. And if they keep control of that party, it's going to be years before they're cleaned up. So his fixed point yesterday was just terribly important.
Don't think for one minute, too, that isn't another thing that terrifies the people at the Post and the Times and the CBS and the rest. Don't you agree?
I think
they're terrified by this.
They smell it coming.
At Harvard and the rest. God, I bet you at the Harvard Square, and the faculty people are probably dying. They know they're going to be on the outside.
Yeah, very much on the outside. And that's exactly...
And if they thought they were outside before, you wait.
We've got a nice little jolt coming for the McGovern folks the week after next. The week after this coming one, Harris is going to... Just talked to Lou last night. He's going to put out a daily series of polls, profile on McGovern. And he's going to do three of them in a row, just on McGovern, and show that the conclusion of it will be that he has less public confidence and support than any presidential candidate has had since Harris started polling. And he's going to get in this 58% has no confidence in him. And all those confidence questions will be worked in there.
Those confidence questions come out really about the same in his latest trial heat as they did before, or did he take them this place?
He took them all again, and they're almost identical. The personal confidence, McGovern went from 59 disapproved to 58 disapproved, with no change. He stopped deteriorating.
But of course, you can't keep deteriorating worse than that.
Well, that's right. The point is that he had gone right into the absolute rock bottom, and he hit the hardcore, the people who vote.
Scammon has made a point that is very, very important, too. our youth surge came, I mean, youth is all came, and it will tend to taper a bit. Youth will be that way. Also, we'll lose some Jews.
Yep.
That's inevitable. The youth, the Jews, and the blacks, we'll just continue to lose.
Uh-huh.
Basically, because they'll find out that they'll see that it's a black-white business, and they'll end up.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's where your thing evens out. On the other hand, what we hope to do is to solidify in the other areas and hope to get our road out. That's really the theory.
But I'm looking at 32 demographic categories in the latest Harris data, and what you have just described is exactly what has happened. We have solidified with union. No change. And that's just held right on strong. McGovern has gained 1 point among Democrats, so he's picked up nothing really there. Among independents, very little change. Among WASPs, no change, white Anglo-Saxon person. A slip-off among Jews. Catholics holding just about the same, a little 3 point movement among Catholics, but that's nothing. Women, actually.
He might have picked up there because of his statement on parochial schools, which I think.
Harris thinks he did. Harris thinks that would account for a 3 point movement. He gained 3, we lost 3, but it's not really significant. But a big drop among the 18 to 29-year-olds, 10-point shift.
What does it show now?
47-45, you winning the under 30-year-old vote.
But, yeah.
And that's about what we ought to do. We ought to do 50-50 in the under 30. Well, we ought to do a little better than that.
What does it show on Catholics now, according to Harris?
White Catholics, 58-31.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
Oh, my God. It was exactly reversed in 1968. Huh?
Right.
Except that you were way out of the White Catholic, 62-27 before. You see, that's a little movement that could be the speech. It could be just the...
It was 50... What was it before?
62-27.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But you...
Right.
58-31 is fine. The union members... you were saying yesterday that's only a quarter of the working force, but it's more significant than that. Is now 55-34,
mm-hmm.
And in the biggest bulge we've ever had was a 34-point gain. It was 56-34. You see, that's no change.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. And that's many. And there's more, Mr. President. So when you consider a blue collar worker is probably I don't know, maybe 40-50% are unionized. Union members are only a quarter of the workforce, but...
When does Harris publish his trolley? Monday?
Well, it was telegraphed to... it was given to the Chicago Tribune Syndicate at 4 on Friday. They had given him a 4 o'clock deadline.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't know what they've done with it. He assumes they put it out by telegram, which they usually do, but if that were the case, it would have...
Appeared today.
Would have appeared today, so they may have mailed it, in which case it'll break sometime tomorrow, along with Senlinger and Yankelovich. All together. So
you think Yankelovich will go tomorrow or not, or
well,
is he going to hold?
No, I checked yesterday afternoon, Mr. President, and Clausen said it's being released before Monday a.m., and New York Times will have it tomorrow morning, plus the Time magazine now. Maybe they yanked it out, but that's when it's due. Bastards probably won't want to print it, because it's pretty...
Did it move the other way?
Yeah, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
But that's a hell of a...
Of course, his was taken in a different spread of time, too.
Well, yeah, but he takes a hell of a big sample. You know, he goes in for 2,500 people in 16 states, so that's...
Yeah.
And his are in the big states. His are in the...
Right.
The vote-heavy states.
And the Sendlinger's, he's already sent his out, hasn't he?
Yes, for release at 6 o'clock tonight, so it may be... Maybe on radio tonight.
The damned amazing thing. You're right, though. He doesn't pull the young people.
Well, he doesn't get the young people, and he doesn't get blacks. You see,
because get black
the blacks don't have telephones.
Right. So he comes up with 61-21.
Yes, sir.
Good God.
It's 62-21. He's got a 41-point lead.
Yeah.
Now, I've talked to Alan, and one of my men is going up there this afternoon to listen to his monitoring, because Al claims that... It's just over. Al claims that the intensity of the responses is what you have to listen to. He said you have to listen
to
how strongly these people feel about this, because he said you'll see that in 6 weeks nobody can change the mind of the American public. So I want somebody else to listen.
Sure.
So I sent Dick Howard up to be there this evening, also to be sure that he gets his poll out and answers questions about it well. But his point is, and this could be be the case, that he doesn't get blacks and he doesn't get youth, and if there's a shift there, he would never detect it. And what he's got is simply a strengthening of
our side.
Of our side. Very strong. And
what does it show among women, the Harris thing? About the same?
No, you're doing, well, yes, about the same. You're doing, among women, you're 59-30.
That's good.
Among men, you're 58-32.
We do better among women.
For the first time ever in the Harris polls, you're stronger among women than among men. And I can't answer that, except to say that that's not probably a statistically significant difference. In other words, it's probably hard to...
Well, in any event, that's right. How is Harris going to play it? Is he going to play it as a McGovern gain? Or?
No.
Not quite that much, huh?
No, what he says is, the lead of this thing is...
I don't really care myself. We might help us either way.
There's a real plus to this, Mr. President, in the sense of getting people off their ass.
Yeah.
Getting them working.
Now, let me say, it's pretty hard to get them to working if you're 59-31, though, for Christ's sake.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. Except that they'll say, well,
he's gaining.
Yeah, let's not let anything... and some of your liberal press, you know, the Washington Post is absolutely predictable. They'll say McGovern surges, you know, that'll be...
Yeah.
Surges to a 28-point deficit, but...
Yeah. And then ignore the others.
The way he's going to play it is that for the first time since May, McGovern's deterioration has stopped, and the gap has stopped expanding. In other words, he's playing it that McGovern has now bottomed out. And,
that's all right.
Well, that's good, sure. He said that he's got in here, one theory out of this poll will be that the 6-point decline in the Nixon lead is a signal that McGovern has now turned the corner. And the election will proceed to come much closer. Or the second theory is that with a 28% lead, Richard Nixon has an insurmountable margin. Neither interpretation would be warranted from these results. If the election were held last Friday, the day after the polling ended, the Harris Survey Division of 59-31, I could well be overstating the mark for two reasons. The undecided voters running higher than usual at this stage. Sign of flexibility among undecided voters. The undecided voters 4-1 Democratic. He then goes on to conclude that if the election were held today, the outcome would probably be 61-39, approximately the same margin as 1964. So that's pretty hard to take that as a...
Gotcha. Well, we don't care. Fine, let him. And also, I think he could be shading things a bit.
Well, I think he is. I think he's scared.
He could be shading it because of, as I say, we know Sindlinger isn't shading it.
No, he can't. He does is take raw data.
That's right.
He doesn't. He doesn't do any.
And Yankelovich, I would think, would shade it the other way.
Probably. That's right. Probably.
Hmm.
What you've got, that was another point Scanlon made. Scanlon said Lou Harris is probably 3%, 3 points too Democratic. He said he puts in 52% Democrats. And he said Gallup doesn't have that high a percentage. So he said you always lose base data, baselines, against which his stuff is calculated. He said, I think, tends to have the country too Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Scanlon's point. Gallup, he said, tends to have it just a little bit the other way.
Too much Republican, right.
Which may be so. But he said the point is that if you take a look at Sindlinger and Yankelovich and Harris, and I went through all of this with Scanlon, he said, I would say that you are probably today 65-35 if the election were held today. He said, you probably will find that Harris is hedging his bets. He said he always did. He said, as a matter of fact, Harris, interesting point. He said, Harris never had LBJ as far ahead as Gallup had him.
Also, we want to remember that Harris had Humphrey beating us, you know. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
By 4 points, actually. 52-41. Huh?
The Sunday before the election.
Yeah, he knows that, too.
Oh, damn right. And he claims that we turned it around in the last 48 hours. But
no,
I think
it never changed.
No, I think it was Scanlon made this point yesterday. He said it's just that his tables, he said all these pollsters get their raw data. And he said then they measure it against the tables. He said Harris, I think, has got too many Democrats, which showed up at 68, and too many young. He said, I don't think the young will vote the same percentage.
That I'm sure of.
Yeah, that I'm positive of that also.
They will tend to vote, I suppose, if McGovern will go roaring around about Vietnam, but so be it.
Well, but he's going to get he'll get those college youth maybe back. like that.
Well, they're going to be there. They're going to be about half and half. That's my view.
Yeah, I think I'd even concede him the first voter and not worry about it. And then, of course, you run the 30 vote would come out positive to us because the 24 to 30 year olds, we do much better than we do with the 18 to 24s. But that's the place where it's going to swing back and forth.
Sure.
6 weeks from the president. I think the
yeah.
Jewish thing is bound. I mean, it's just we.
Oh yeah, well the Jewish thing will swing back to its traditional Democratic moorings because the Jews all read the liberal press too.
Not all the way. I think we'll do better than.
No, we won't go down to 15, but we'll go down to about 30. That's what I've always felt that we would get about a third of it this time.
That's right. I think we'll get 30.
That's not bad.
Oh, and the black vote we'll get 10% of it.
That's right.
And the government will get 90% of it, but a hell of a lot of it's going to stay home.
Sure.
They will not get the enormous outpouring of black voters that. Not turn them on, first of all. Secondly, Peter, our own post, is finding enormous apathy in Detroit Blacks, where he's doing a study right now. But that one's going to go against us. And you're going to find, that's going to be it. That's the youth of blacks and the Jews. That's where it'll move.
Sure.
Nowhere else. You're going to, that union vote, as long as Meany and other union leaders keep talking the way they do, you're going to stay just where it is.
Right.
And as long as you talk about amnesty and make the kind of case you made yesterday, we're going to lose no union support, no middle American support. And the Catholic vote, we've talked extensively this week with Crowell, Cook,
good.
McManus, all of them. I all say just
keep right at it, huh?
Well, they're giving us their mailing list so that we can do a direct Catholic mailing to parents of children
good.
In parochial schools.
Good.
Telling them to get behind the Nixon tax credit. You know, McGovern didn't really endorse a particular specific thing, and we have.
Right.
Thank God we have, because that enables the hierarchy to work for us. But they all said, no, just keep your powder dry. Don't worry, this fellow.
Now, we don't want to be blatantly going after any group. That's the thing I feel about it. That's why I'm not going to go after these Jews.
No, I think that's right. Absolutely, we should not be. And on this mailing that we're going to do, it's not coming from us. It's going to come from a group of Catholic educators saying that people should support the Nixon tax credit and President Nixon in the election. We don't want to be in that position. But that's the point that Crowell, by the way, made. He said it's so transparent, and he gets the NEA endorsement, and then he does this. And he said, "Don't worry, the Catholic teachers know the significance of getting the NEA endorsement."
Sure, they fought them all their lives.
That's exactly right. And he said that in the classrooms and in the archdiocese, you don't have to worry. People know exactly what this fellow is doing and where's he been for 2.5 years.
Yep.
So he's not helping. And the Shriver, being a Catholic, isn't helping. Shriver's not helping.
Oh, Christ.
Shriver's not doing anything except driving anybody with any intelligence away. Jesus Christ, what a...
Oh, that Shriver thing is a...
Yeah.
Of course, people can say, well, he's bouncing around and he erodes a bit and so forth. And you also want to remember, all things erode some, Chuck. You've got to figure, I don't care whether it's Watergate or whether it's the wheat deal. People are not all that interested in sophisticated politics, so that cuts you a couple points. What's the difference?
That's exactly right. There's going to have to be something.
That kind of erosion doesn't matter in an election of this sort. It's like Johnson was probably hurt a little by the Bobby Baker thing and hurt a little by the Jenkins thing.
That's right.
But it didn't matter that much.
But who cares when you're that kind of a... Another point that Scanlon said, this is important to keep in mind, I think, for all of our people inside to understand. It's not a good thing to talk about. Scanlon said when you get out on the fringes, you know, 60 to 65%,
yeah.
He said it has to be soft. And he said you have to expect it to be soft and to move back and forth. Because he said, when anybody in American politics is talking about that kind of a lead in a two-way election, he said, you just, out there, he said, it's very, A, it's hard to measure, and B, it's got to be volatile.
Sure.
And he said, you get down into the hardcore of your support, and it's pretty strong. He said, but you've got to figure that out there, you're going to show some movement back and forth. You have to be.
Right.
And little things are going to affect it. The Green Deal, maybe.
Good point.
Maybe the Green Deal does take a little slice off the top.
Sure.
Maybe 2 weeks from now, the governor.
about it. They're going to stick right to our guns.
Well, I think it's going just right.
Doing the right things. And I must say, if I were sitting in the McGovern camp, what would have worried me the more about, they say, getting the president out, I'd say, Jesus Christ, let's keep him from going out.
Yeah.
You know, like when you go out there, I'm utterly convinced that the kind of stuff in Texas has to be only positive.
Big plus.
Now, incidentally, the way Atlanta probably will work out, rather than an event, you just can't go and, you know, you can't get into a pattern where it looks like it's just you're using the press. But rather than the event, it seems to me that the way we ought to really do that, and I've talked to Holland about, we go down to Atlanta, we motorcade, then I will have two meetings, private meetings, at all private, have the motorcade for the television. And on the private meetings, I'll have one with the committee to reelect from all over the South.
Good.
Second with Democrats for Nixon from all over the South. Two different meetings.
Good.
Meet with them. And then I will have a radio broadcast, which will be carried, which I will make on national defense and national security. A radio broadcast, and I'll just do it right there and then fly back to Washington. Now, you see, the radio broadcast has the advantage on that issue that's the hell of a Southern issue.
Would you do a regional radio broadcast?
No, do it for the nation. I can do it regionally. I can do it either way.
Well, the only reason I raise that question, Mr. President, is that people would say, well, why go to Atlanta to make a national radio address? Why not make it in Washington? So maybe you could...
Well, we could do that.
Well, I was just thinking of adding reason for doing it from Atlanta.
Yeah. You see, the point is, if you go out there and say, well, I'm going out to do the Martin Luther King Memorial School or something, or I'm going to do the Eisenhower Library or down there, it's just a little too obvious. I mean, they said, what the hell, you're just doing it for top political things.
That's right. No, I think that's good, Mr. President.
That might be it, but the radio broadcast thing I think is good. The only other thing you can do is to go down there and have a press conference with the Southern and national press, but why open yourself up to that?
That's right. No reason to look.
We don't need that.
No, you don't need it.
Well, it just adds an element of controversy to the whole damn thing.
Yeah, of course you...
But anyway,
we'll
do that. I just feel that. I feel at the present time we don't want to get in any controversy about issues except on our ground.
That's right. Absolutely. Of course, I think you handle it so damn well that I don't really worry too much about this.
That's right. Well...
I didn't ask you about it. I think you've got all the... None of the issues that are going right now, you don't have any trouble with any of them. It's a point, though, that you shouldn't open up unnecessarily.
Yeah.
I think I do think, Mr. President, that that you can do events like you did Friday, and you can go into Atlanta. I'd love to see an Atlanta motorcade. You can go to the Northeast.
Boston, we may be able to find something at the Quincy shipyards that I can do.
Well, I'd like to keep you out of downtown Boston. I didn't mention that to you the other day, but I'd like to see something at the North Shore or something at the Naval Shipyard in Quincy or something.
How far is Quincy from...
From Boston?
Yeah.
About 20 minutes by car. Or...
Well, we've got a hell of an event at the Quincy shipyards that the Mayor Laird is planning to do there. We're giving them a big contract or some damn thing.
Well, that's a big thing in the state, too. That means a lot to the state.
And but we do want some show of people up there. That's the only thing.
Well, there's a way to do that. That's a very interesting point. You could land at Logan, chopper over to South Boston, and motorcade from South Boston to Quincy, and you'd be away from the
camp. You'd get through the Italians that way, huh?
Well, you miss the Italians. They're on the north side of
South Boston. South Boston is Italian.
No, South Boston used to be Irish and is now Polish. And,
oh, it is.
Yep. But that's all right. That's not bad because you could have you can cover enough ethnic areas anywhere around Boston, so there's no problem motorcading, and it's all old tenement streets where they'll be four and five deep and packed in. And South Boston has great significance symbolically in the area, and that's on the way to Quincy, and that's only 15 minutes from that shipyard. So you could do it.
Right.
And I think that's a plus.
But you'd stay out of downtown Boston.
I would stay out of downtown Boston. It's too easy for the kids to come in from Boston University. Not even so much of it as... And once you... But if you stay out of it, if you're on East Boston, you're on the other side of the river. If you're on South Boston, you're away. And there's no way that...
Well, the kids can get there too, can't they? They can bus them over.
Oh, yeah, but it's harder. Hell of a lot harder. They can just walk into the hotel areas.
I see.
But they've got to get into the... another thing is that a hell of a lot of them won't go into those blue-collar areas.
Scared them, huh?
Oh, you're damn right. They won't go to East Boston, I'll guarantee you.
What's East Boston?
Italian, and they... perfect.
Is there any way we can get there?
East Boston is where the airport is, so that, yes, that's easy. Oh, they're kidding. And it's easy, as a matter of fact.
Would it be possible to land at the airport and motorcade East Boston, South Boston, then go to Quincy?
Yes, because there's now an expressway that takes you right from the... you can motorcade in through East Boston, get on the expressway, get right off in South Boston, and then motorcade the rest of the way to Quincy.
I would check this out in any event.
Avoid downtown.
But I think the main thing is no use to go into downtown and have those snot-brapped kids around.
Now, in Boston, that would almost be inevitable if you went downtown. I told the advanced people last week that I'd work out something that avoided downtown. You don't need to go to downtown.
That's right.
But the kids won't go into the ethnic areas because they'll get beaten up.
Good.
Right.
I hope they are.
But the only point is, I think you can do, Mr. President, even four or five events. Friday was a huge plus. That just came off brilliantly. And so important you did the other events with it. You've got two nights of marvelous television, and afternoon and morning, and the next afternoon, an excellent printed response. Excellent. And you can do that four or five times. And I think an Atlanta motorcade, a Northeast, the things you're talking about, it's just the right amount. I'm not worried about that thing too much. I think it's just right. And it's being seen with the people swarming around. There's a message in that. Damn important message. Because he's not getting that. The message people are getting when they see him is that he has to bring Teddy around or Muskie or something to draw a crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it draws that distinction very clearly.
Right. Okay, we'll check her out with you later, okay?
Yes, sir, Mr. President.
Bye.
Thank you, sir.